Let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome to our warm-up speaker, Allie.
Hi, I'm Allie. I'm an alcoholic. I was like, what is this? Timer? Okay. So I was thinking how I like to go to speaker meetings, not be the speaker at a meeting. So, but, you know, if we didn't have the courage to get up here and do this when it was uncomfortable and scary, we wouldn't have any speaker meetings to go to. So we're all just, you know, kind of in this together. And I get to listen to more speakers than ever have to be one. So, so you know, people are nervous or whatever. When I came into this program, I mean, like the first year, I couldn't even talk in a meeting, let alone, start to talk in a meeting, start to talk to people, had that fear of people and what am I going to talk about, anxiety. I started drinking when I was in high school, at like 15 years old, and believe I was alcoholic from the get-go because, you know, that restless, irritable, discontent feeling was everything prior to that first drink, and then finding that first drink, it was my answer. It was my answer to all that anxiety and all that fear I had, and I've heard that a lot in meetings, and so I was constantly chasing that down every chance I got because, you know, that was my little bit of a reprieve. So then that had to keep happening, you know, in order to have that reprieve. So right off the bat, I was drinking alcoholically because I liked how it made me feel. Had nothing to do with the taste or anything. And I had a lot of courage when I had that alcohol. So I was from Philadelphia, and so back there they have like fake stores, and I would just, you know, at 17, I just march in there. Then I'm, you know, in my mind I was 21, and I got served all the time. I was going to bars all the time, every weekend, all through high school. So when other people were having, you know, high school experiences, I was having some adult experience without the maturity and ability to really live in that world, and just got brazen with it. I mean, to the point of sneaking bottles of booze in because it's too expensive to drink in the bar, and just ordering soda and, you know, dumping the alcohol in, and just let alone having these fake IDs and being at the bar. And at first, you know, I just didn't care. I just didn't care anymore when I drank about anything, anybody. And so I ruined several friendships in high school and decided, 18 to just hit the road. And I moved west and worked in several different national parks. And really, again, alcohol was like liquid courage for me because it was scary to be moving around by myself. And when I had the alcohol, I was like, okay, this is, I can do this. And then when you wake up the next morning, you're like, shit, all that fear and all that comes back again. And how soon can I get that alcohol? So drinking in the morning was not, a problem for me because it was my medicine, basically. That's how it felt. I was just became a daily drinker. And I tried to not drink if I was working, but really I only worked seasonally. So I'd work like three and a half months in national parks, and then collect unemployment the rest of the time and just stay drunk the entire time. So that was the lifestyle I wanted. And yet it led to a very lonely, isolated, you know, situation because I moved around. I didn't want that life, but that was the life that I was living. I used to scoff. I'd be laying on a beach in Hawaii and scoff at those people back in offices, you know, like having real jobs and stuff. And, you know, now I work in an office and I'm one of those people I used to like look down on because it's like, you know, I I just had that better than less than, so I was so much better than everybody else because I'm on a beach in Hawaii, wasted out of my mind, until it, you know, it took the best of me basically at like age 23. I wound up in a mental institute, and that was, you know, and they say jails, institutions, and death. So I'd already got like check mark on that one, and that was not a fun place to be. That straitjacket and the padded room, and this was like in '86 when I was telling them all the drugs and alcohol I was doing, and the psychiatrists were like, you got your mental case, you know. So I didn't know. I just thought I was mentally off, and so conned my way out of that mental ward and found an AA meeting. And what a relief when I went to that very first meeting to know I was just an alcoholic and that there is recovery and that these people seemed normal that were there, you know. And because in my head I was like, okay, I'll never get married, I'll never live a normal life, I'll never have kids, and I'm crazy. I just knew I was insane and I was crazy. And the message of AA got to me at 23, that I felt hope and relief. And it's really difficult when you're young because it's like you hear some of the AA stuff and you're like, well, that's not how it is for me. So I stayed around for like a year, and then I went back out, and until I could then mark off all the rest of what AA had said. And I came back in at 28 because I was like, okay, I have fulfilled that prophecy, you know. All the rest of the insanity came back, and all of the just feeling crazy in your own head and not understanding why you do the things you do and having absolutely no control over my consumption of alcohol. And getting drunk at the times it was not appropriate. And certainly it was a lot of driving around. By then I had a 3-year-old daughter, and I drove all the time with her. You know, I was drunk and she was in the car, and I endangered her life every day. And it didn't matter to me because all that mattered was that alcohol. And so fortunately, being that I had that little taste of AA when I was 23, I knew where to come back to. And I went to my first meeting again at 28 when up in Groveland outside of Yosemite. And I felt that same hope again. There was a woman, we sat in a circle, and there was a woman that said something like, I don't have to live that way anymore. And that was like the key phrase that I heard, that because I thought I had to live that way. I knew no other way, and I didn't think it was possible to live any other way. And I thought that I was the worst alcoholic because, you know, at that point you only have your own experience to go from. And I was the worst alcoholic. And as I came around to meetings, I started identifying, I'm just like these people, and they drank like me, and, you know, and just that little ray of hope started to come back because I heard old timers, you know, they'd always come up to me after the meeting and say, just hang in there, it'll get better. That was the other thing that they just consistently said to me. And I consistently said, when is it going to get better? You know, because it's not getting better. You know, that first year sucks. And yet I just held on. I just held on because they said, whatever happens, whatever you're going through, just don't pick up a drink and come to meetings. You know, real simple, real basic, and it'll get better. And it took, I was used to that quick relief of things getting better like alcohol can do, because I drank fast and I drank, you know, for that purpose. And so I just kept coming back to meetings. And by then I was willing to do whatever was suggested from AA, and moved down here to Three Rivers and in 93, and I had 9 months at that point, and met my sponsor, Sue Ellen, and again, I no longer said, this is ridiculous, this feels stupid. You know, my sponsor in Groveland, you know, doing the third step prayer in her living room on the knees, you know, and I thought, this is crazy. What is this? And but I was so desperate for sobriety that I was willing to do what seemed really crazy to me. This is so weird. But and sharing my fifth step with her, scared to death, but relieved after I did it. I had no idea to expect that after I did my fifth step. So pretty much the difference was everything that AA people were saying was then actually coming true instead of me disagreeing like when I was 23. And so I just kept doing what was suggested. And that's basically still what I do today. So I still go to meetings consistently. I stay in touch with sober people. My people are sober people now. I had to do away with the alcoholics, all my party friends. And little by little, and I had to pray for those people to be replaced, you know, because it's hard to give up friends when you don't know who your new friends are going to be yet. And over time, that's who I've replaced these people with in my life. We're all just sober people, and we're all on this sobriety path, and it's awesome. I'm very grateful. And I still call my sponsor, and she still makes suggestions, and I do the writing, and I just do everything that's suggested around here. And I've managed to keep staying sober. I know that. And I don't feel insane anymore. And I think that was the first awesome freedom that I felt, was like, hey, if I don't go back to alcohol, then there's a good chance I won't end up in a mental ward again. It took a while to figure that out. But, you know, the longer I stay sober, I might not have to go back to that or to jail or any of the other things, you know. And I do, you know, a service. I secretary a meeting, and I'm a treasurer of another meeting. And I make meetings, you know, and I pray every morning, and I read when I remember to. But, you know, all of the suggestions that are around here, and they tell you, you know, it works if you work it. So I work it, and, you know, it's been working. It's still working. And it's way cool to have you know, the same sponsor for 21 years now. And the journey we've been through together, through kids and divorces and all that life stuff, we help each other. We you know, she helps me, and I hope I help her. And the way it works like that is, you know, oftentimes when I'm saying something to someone I sponsor, it's helping me because I'm hearing myself say it, and I can't be a hypocrite and say something that I'm not doing myself. So I have a couple of sponsees, and, you know, it all just keeps, it's that big circle of life and recovery. So anyway, I think my 10 minutes are up, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we off to my left, we have a big table here with CDs. All very good. Pick one, throw $2 on the table, and take it home. We have coffee back in the back, and tons of cookies. Enjoy them. We're going to take a little break right now. Yeah.
And I've had my sponsor who said, be honest. I brought my sponsor, and I got me a mean sponsor. They have mean sponsors in Fresno. In a meeting, when the phones ring, no one looks at the person with the phone. They look at her, because they know she's going to rip them, you know, for having the phone. Anyway, so my sobriety date is August 26, 1990. Yes. Now, I want to say that some of you remember me so well because you just keep me because we're a little self-centered. You know that, don't you? And that you'll go, well, didn't she used to have April 15th, 1990? Well, I did. And I used to claim that for about 5 years of my sobriety. And let me tell you what happened. I dated a guy in NA. that kind of messed me up, you know, because I went into an NA meeting and they said, teen is sober. And I went, oh. Because I had got sober and went with my neighbor up to Humboldt. Not a good idea to go to Humboldt. When you're fairly clean, barely, just barely sober. And she talked me into smoking a little joint. And so I did. A little. And so I never told anybody for a long time. And so it bugged me, and it started bugging me. And after having it 5 years, I thought, you know, this is a rigging. And I started doing the steps at a different level. And I had to come clean at a meeting one day. Now, let me tell you, I didn't know what that day was. I was like, what? But I don't know what the day is. I don't remember what day we moved her. And, you know, my neighbor, I don't talk to her anymore anyway. So I prayed. I said, God, if you want me to reclaim this, let me know. So I swear this is the truth. 2 days later, I came across this picture of us when we went to Humboldt and had the date on the bottom of it. I went to a meeting that Thursday and reclaimed my time. You don't mess with God when he starts giving you those kind of answers. You do not mess with him, okay? So anyway, I came in these rooms. I'll first qualify very quickly. You know, I had a drunk mother, and I did everything in my life not to be that woman. I did everything, and so I learned to not dress like her, not act like her, get jobs. She was a bartender, and I just did everything, you know. The only thing I did is exactly like her is married loser men and have lots of children. So I did do that. Okay, so I didn't want to be that alcoholic, and so I thought, you know, I have a little bit of drug stories in my, and I'm not going to talk about that because my driver on my bus was alcohol. You know, drugs have a seat on the bus, but it had a lousy view. It was in the back. You know, because when I got a hold of alcohol, that is where I wanted to go. Because when it started, it was on. So anyway, I drive to do everything. So I was a strong woman against all odds. I'll just qualify a little bit. I was a little hippie chick, hitchhiked across the country, blah, 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 you know, did all that weird, you know, and went back to, you know, went to school and got smart jobs. I accidentally found out I was smart. And that's true, because I didn't know I was. I always thought I was dumb. And because I was like this little chubby kid, and all my life was about not feeling good enough, you know. And the main thing is I never felt comfortable with myself. And what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it has given me the ability to be comfortable with me. And most of all, to be comfortable with you. And that's what I absolutely love about Alcoholics Anonymous today. So we'll get to that part. So anyway, I'm just going to do the quick qualify because Rick said I get to go till 9:30, but I promise I won't go down to it much longer than that. But anyway, you know, I'm one of those that they get called on. The words I pass have never come across my mouth. But anyway, Carol says, if you have to volunteer, shut up. Okay. So anyway, I didn't mean sponsor, but I love her with all my heart, and I had a nice sponsor here, if I tell you. I had Charlene for years. That was a sweet, and I tell her how sweet and nice she was, because she was lovely, and how I, you know, changed, I don't know. But anyway, it's what I needed, because Charlene was sweet, but she did get me to work my steps. And she did get me to get healed with those kids of mine. So, you know, so I became that drunk mother that I never wanted to become. But I always convinced myself I wasn't that drunk mother because, A, I had a job. B, I provided for those ungrateful children. Okay? And they were fed. Not well, but they were set, okay? So, you know, I was one of those mothers, I loved, I know some of you are going to remember these landmarks, Princes, you know. I got sober, I tell you, I lived here for a long time. A lot of you, I've known you from the day you walked in, and a lot of you have known me from the day I walked in. Marilyn and I were teasing each other. I said, did we ever think we would be called old timers? You know? I want to change the name to the mature ones. But anyway, so a lot of, so when I had those kids, I envied anybody. Most of you guys were alcoholics, and you like, you'd be okay with being an alcoholic. I remember being at the grocery store, loading up my cart with beer and booze, and then putting bananas on them, and cereal, and positioning meat around them. And then I go to the checkout stand, and I am not exaggerating, there was a guy in front of me who had two jugs on there, just sitting up there, bold as he could be, just two there. Didn't apologize, you know, I'm going through the line, lying that I'm having a party, you know. I have friends coming over tonight, you know, because I was doing everything to convince myself I'm not an alcoholic. I had this measuring stick that said, I'm not alcoholic because these things. And so when we read this list from the book, that was me. If I ever do this thing, then I'm alcoholic. So I kept changing the lines in the sand. That line kept getting farther and farther and farther. If I ever do this, if I ever drive with my kids in the car, you know, I have a story that my son, let me tell you what, I got sober with my kids as teenagers, so they have stories, all right? Especially during the holidays. Remember the time, Mom, when we drove and you used to tell me to duck and throw your beer cans out? I mean, those are my children's memories, you know, precious memories of their mother. So, anyway, I tried to, and I envied those who could be boldly alcoholic. And I could not be boldly alcoholic. I had to hide my alcoholism all the time. I had to pretend. I learned that if you got good quality makeup, you could hide the lines and the bags pretty well. Lancome was my favorite counter, okay? So, and I figured if you dressed well, you could hide, you know, that you are an alcoholic because you have color coordinated your outfit, okay? Those, and I know we laugh, but that is my head, honey. I mean, I am just, and I am thinking these things, and I am making these bargains all the time. Well, on April 15th, 1990, I had taken it to the lowest of the lows with the drinking and my children. My daughter was old enough and she was sick of me. That one day she looked at me exactly the same way I used to look at my mother. And she was sick of me, and so were all my kids. And I got up that morning on April 15th in my room. I got down on my knees and I said, God, if you, and I wasn't religious, I said, God, if you could raise Jesus from the dead, please raise me because I am dead. And I didn't know how to do it anymore. I didn't know how to do trying to pretend not being an alcoholic. I didn't know how to do trying to be a mother. I didn't know how to do trying to be an employee, trying to do all these things. And it was just exhausting. It was exhausting. And so I walked in. I called your little hotline. Okay, let's step back. Right before, I knew I had a problem on that Prince trip I was telling you about. I get sidetracked. I'll blame my age. I was going to Prince's one morning, and I knew it. I knew I had a friend in the car with me to get booze, and I said we were both saying how we're alcoholic, and I remember going down the road and seeing this little jogger, and I really wanted to hit her because I was so jealous, you know, because she looked happy. My whole world is looking at everybody thinking they look happy, you know, because I'm not happy. And so I go to Prince's. I'm really grateful they have a donut place right next to there. So I drive through, get those ungrateful children donuts, and then I take it back, and I knew I had a problem. So I went into some recovery place, and I said I might have a problem. And he says, well, let's run your insurance. And the insurance... the insurance didn't pan out, so I said, well, God, tell me I'm not an alcoholic. See, I use God for my advantage. You know, I use him. I got these cards, you know, I deal out, you know. And so I'll pull these cards and I'll use him. And some days I start out and say, I got this, you know. Anyway, so I went on a terror, and that's what took me to the April 15th day. And so anyway, on that morning, after that, I called, and remember Dottie, I called. We had a nice Dottie here. Fresno had a mean Dottie. And Dottie was her sponsor, so I understand the mean part, okay? So anyway, our nice Dottie here, I kept trying to ask her to talk me into trying to talk her into that I'm not alcoholic, and she said, you know, sweetheart, you just need to come in the room to figure that out, you know. And I was pissed because I'm real good at manipulating you, telling you, getting you to tell me what I needed to hear to be okay. Because that's been my whole game. I know how to get you to tell me what I need to hear to be okay. I measure all my okayness on where you are in your life. And I am always looking and I am always watching. So anyway, she wouldn't do it. And I walked into the room. And I always teased, I told Rick, he was in that room. That first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting I walked in, Rick was in that room. Now, I'm going to tell you a story about that room. That room was big. I just came off work. I had my nice little business banking outfit on. And I had all that stuff thinking I'm hiding behind. I didn't mention that I had blown up to about 200 pounds of swollen and miserable, you know, alcoholic. And I thought I looked good. And anyway, I'm rolling in there. And I quickly watched, I looked around the table and quickly tried to figure out, what are you guys all about? You know? All I know is I was miserable and I needed help. So what was this? You know? And then he busted up in these tables and I couldn't, and I just, it was just so numbing. It was just so hard. And then you guys said, let's hold hands. And I said, uh-oh. And we held hands. Then you said the Lord's Prayer. And I got scared. I said, oh, crap, here I am in another one of my religious or whatever. And I say this as a joke, but I actually thought this, that if you guys broke out in hymn, I would not be standing here today. If we had an AA hymn, I would not be standing here today. So anyway, you didn't sing. And I quickly learned that if you said you were alcoholic, that you did not pay attention to me that much. If you said you were a newcomer, I watched you all hover to that person. So I never told you who I was at the beginning. And I just hid in the masses, and I didn't try and tell anybody anything. I'm thinking I'm blending in, and I know some of you old-timers are looking at, oh, God, there's a sick one sitting right over there. Okay, but I kept coming back, and I kept coming back because I didn't come back because I didn't get that wonderfulness about this place at first. I didn't feel that at all. All I knew was my misery was so great, it kept me in here until I heard the stories. And then all of a sudden, I saw the non-judgment that you had for my insanity and went the way I drank. And I heard your story because you drank like I drank. And you took your life to the low that I took myself. And all of a sudden, the stories are what kept me coming back. And when I heard the stories, I identified. And I'll never forget the one woman who talked in a meeting about having children at home. And I was a single parent, and she loved her children. And I wanted to love my children again. I loved them, but I wanted to like them again, you know? And I wanted to like me again. And this woman seemed like she liked herself, and she liked her children. So I set off on a journey that I had been doing for years. I had a son who hated my guts, and he told me so on a regular basis. He didn't hold back on that, and I had, and it was a constant fight and a constant battle. I'll just quickly tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous taught me, and the women in this program taught me, that it wasn't how he behaved, it's how I behaved and how I treated him. And miraculously, and I went to a person in this program who was a therapist, And I took this ungrateful son of mine that I thought was all the problems, that my life would be better if he would behave better. I could act better if he would behave better. I would be a better mother if he would just not talk to me like that. I would be happy to do things for you if you would not be an asshole. Okay? That's what we, conversations we would have. And then I went and took him to the therapist who happened to be in the program. Not a good idea, by the way. I'm going to tell you why. Because when it was over, he brought me in, and I was so excited to hear that he's going to tell me what an asshole I raised, and that you got problems, and we need to ship him off somewhere. I actually one night was so mad at him, I called Juvenile Hall and said, "You better come get this little jerk, because I'm going to kill him." She says, "Ma'am, you shouldn't say things like that on the phone." Anyway. I get called into his room, and this man goes, "You got a wonderful kid there." And he says, "You're the problem. And you better get with your sponsor and start working your steps, because you need to do the changing, not him. And that'll be about $350. Thank you very much." Okay. And then I had to learn acceptance at a whole new level. So I did that. And I did start treating him better. And the amazing part of that story is he started getting better. Because it became about how I treat you and not how you treat me. And so, and that young man today loves me with all his heart. And that man celebrated 14 years 2 days ago. Because yeah. One day he walked in my apartment where I was living, and his belly was swollen up, and his nose was red, and his eyes were bloodshot, and I looked at that boy of mine and said, "I am so sorry you have this disease." I said, "But we got three things going for us in this disease. We either get sober, we die, or we go insane. And there's not much choices after that." You know, and he chose to get sober. You know, and today his children have never seen him drink, and my grandchildren have never seen me drink. You know, and that part is the most beautiful part of this program. Can you get that water? I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Now, we're journeying on to the other children. Okay. So as I journeyed through this program, I quickly learned that I didn't do steps at first. I am the epitome and the poster child of how not to do Alcoholics Anonymous at the very beginning. Because I was one of those who only went to a few meetings, enough to just find the stories that kept me going every week. And I remember the first woman I ever asked to sponsor me, she turned me down. We don't do good with rejection. And I remember 2 years later, she got drunk, and I was all happy. And that's how I thought, you guys. I wish I was teasing you, but you know what? I'm not. It is the honest to God truth. And I, you know, so anyway, and then I found Three Rivers, and then I found my friendship with Ellie, and then started my journey, because, you know, there's nothing worse than getting a newcomer and find out you haven't worked the steps and you've got to work the steps with them. So I quickly got working on my steps, and I quickly found that this isn't why I came. I didn't come in here to stand in front of all of you and tell my story. I didn't come in here. I just came in here to just get comfortable enough to be able to go back out there. But what I did come in here and find is this amazing grace of comfort that I have, and actually joy and freedom that I've never had before. And how do you get that? You know, at first I used AA as my dating service and social event. And that backfired on me, by the way. And some of you know that tragic story. And then I started one day, I was driving up to Three Rivers, I had about 5 years, and I knew I was going to drink. Because it starts first in your head. And remember this, you can choose your way out of here any day you want. Any day you want. I don't care how long you've had this program, we can choose our day out. Any time we want. And that's what the gift of having a spiritual program is. Because I choose not to on a daily basis, on a daily basis. And I choose love and I choose God on a daily basis. And that's where my program stands today. And when I was going up that hill, I told God, I said, you better do something, and you better do something quick, because I'm headed out this door. Because this is just not working for me. Staying sober was not enough. Just not drinking and hanging out with you people wasn't doing it for me. Now, granted, I like you all, but you weren't keeping me sober anymore. You know, you get a little bit of drama going in these rooms with people. You find a reason to get out of here. You guys are nuts some days, you know? I mean, these little stories we get in, you know, we say, you know, my sponsor and I have this great saying, we're not judging, we're just observing, you know? We're not judging, we're just saying, you know? Whew. Yeah. You should be in the meeting in the car we're going to have on the way home. That's the good meeting. At that moment, I had the spiritual lifting of not wanting to drink anymore from the very beginning. In fact, one time I was in my living room and I said, I'm going to drink, and the phone rang, and it was one of you guys talking me off the ledge, okay? I had all those wonderful God moments, but something was deeper that needed to happen to me, something beyond God being a little show-off every once in a while. It had to be something that had to happen inside here to me. And so what happened was, he said, in my thoughts in that moment, that you better start on the spiritual journey. Because if you don't, you're going to get in trouble. And I said, what spiritual journey? Read the book, okay? Because the book is full of spiritual journeys. On page 83, it says you better get the spiritual part of this program or you're in trouble. Period. Doesn't candy coat it, doesn't say anything less than that. And guess what it says, how you'll know if you have the spiritual part of this program? By your behavior. It's your behavior that will show. So let me give you some challenges I've had this week. My behavior. This week, I read my book a lot, and I listen to tapes occasionally. So a friend of mine gave me a Father Tom tape, and it was all about step 3 and step 11, and I was all excited, and I felt so spiritual, and, you know, because I love prayer and meditation, and we'll talk about that in a minute, and why I think it's so important. And so I just think, oh, man, you know, I was feeling like $1 million. I had listened to it coming here to Visalia to go see my auntie. And I was in service, going to pick her up, going to my daughter-in-law's birthday. I'm going to swing by and get some flowers, okay? So I walk in there, and I get these beautiful flowers, and I walk and I see the line. And it's very long, and I go, okay, that's spiritual. I can stand in line. Okay, so I'm standing in line, and then you get that, you know, when are they going to open another line? Okay? That little meter was dropping like a... Damn. She's gone. And so I was sitting there, and that feeling good was going away pretty darn fast. So then I see a guy coming. I'm standing there. I got one thing. Everything, all kinds of stuff. I'm sure they didn't pick me. So some lady rolls up with a basket full of stuff, and he pulls her over. Carol, judge it. It's a Fresno person. Oh, for the love of God. You can't take us anywhere. Okay. So back to my spiritual story. Okay. So here comes this lady, pulls up out of nowhere. She wasn't waiting. She pulls up with a cart full, and this guy grabs her cart and pulls her up there. I look at him, and I go, one thing! One thing! You know? And I stormed off, because don't you know, alcoholics love that. Storming off. We do it here. You know, we go storming off when we're pissed at them. We love it in fights and things. So anyway, so I had that alcoholic storm walk. So I go, put the power down, okay? Like, I'm thinking he's going to follow me and beg me to come back. That's my self-centeredness. So anyway, I get out to the car, and I'm like, you know, and I'm mad. You know? And I wasn't very nice to him. Okay, so I have a daughter who's really wonderful to tell me things. True. Anyway. But she, I told her the story today and she laughed. She says, Mother, you have grown. Because I know a day you would have thrown those flowers at that guy. You have changed so much. Trust me. You know? And it is true. Because this program is about progress, not perfection. It is progress, not perfection. Every day I set out to do this thing a certain way, and I will be constantly disappointed because I am setting out to do this thing. There's the difference. For me, I need to partner up with God, and I need to ask Him. So early on, I get a sponsor, Shirlene, and this sponsor, who taught me two things. One of them pisses me off every time she uses it. What's your part? Every time I'm involved with somebody, I have to look at my part. You know, I take suggestions today. And I quickly have learned that it is by my actions and not how I feel. And to stop looking for the outcome, but to watch how I behave. And by doing that, I have a better chance of treating you better. Because everything I used to do was based on how you behaved with me. You know? And so that got better. So I got another spiritual story to happen today. Okay. So I was reading the 12 and 12 this morning, and I took the day off because I had to get extra spiritual for you folks. I had to catch up on homework. It's an honors program. Okay. So anyway, so you think, and you're on home, you read your spiritual stuff, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. I love everything I read in the big book, and I love everything I read in the 12 and 12. Sometimes I got to go to the 12 and 12 because it breaks it down for me at a level I need to hear about. And I love that thing, especially when you need to learn about prayer and meditation. You need to get in the 12 and 12 and read that chapter in step 10. Anyway, so I decided I'd go for a walk. That's spiritual, right? Go in nature, da-da-da-da. I proceeded to ruin that spiritual moment. You know why? Because I got on the phone. Was not a smart move. I got on the phone, and what did I do? I called my daughter. And I proceeded to piss her off before the phone call was over. And she had to hang up on me and say, look, I got to work this through. And I'll call you back when I find out why you pissed me off. Okay? I got to mention I was gossiping and judging, too, in that phone call. And so, so I step back and I just... What you guys have taught me is to let people have their own feelings and let them have their own work and let them do what they need to do. And so that daughter did call me back. And this is where I have grown in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have learned to listen. I have learned to let you tell me your part, your side of the story. Where before I was telling you how you needed to be and you need to do. And I got to listen to how I heard her feelings. And when I did that part that Carol had taught me so dearly, what is my part, she was absolutely right of what I had done. Now, let me tell you who wins in that one. I do. I felt free. I felt free that I can listen and I can own that. And how do you get there? Well, you know, as I journeyed more into this program and I started doing this thing, I realized that this was something you have to do on a daily basis. So I got into the habit of getting on my knees every morning and getting on my knees every night. I got in the habit of actually writing out inventory, like of how I behaved. Now, some of you in here, I've known you from the day you walked in, and we got nicknames, some of us, Marilyn and I had, we were the prissy bitches, you know, in the early sobriety. We were really cute. We walked around like we were cute. I stopped walking around like I'm cute. I now walk around like I'm grateful to be here. But at the time, all I wanted to do was just, you know, use AA as a way to find something to do. You know, and I even have someone here that I sponsored, inspired me, and she should have. I think I got more than one here that inspired me and should have. You know, because I wasn't doing the deed here. I wasn't doing the steps. And so, and I walked through this thing, and I had to look at my part in all this stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, I was just so astounded how much of a part I had in stuff. So anyway, I moved from Visalia because you guys knew me too well, and I went to Fresno, and I thought I could pull it up there, and I found a meeting there, and I went to every morning, and no one ever called on me. Have you ever moved to new meetings, and they don't know who you are, and you want them to know who you are? And don't you know, I got some time, and they never called on me, and so this... except for on one day, every Wednesday, on Character Defect Day. I got called on every Wednesday on Character Defect Day. I exaggerate you not. I had the hugest resentment for that meeting. And I wasn't sure because they thought I had great wisdom about it or if I really had a lot more to do. So anyway, and since that began my journey of working on those character defects. Now let me tell you what I used to go and do at the beginning when I started working my steps. I went to step 8 and started to make those amends to those kids, those verbal amends, and to a lot of people. And I remember doing it at my employer and the women that I worked with. And they didn't quite receive me as well as I wanted them to receive me. And you know how they give you that look like, yeah, we knew, you know? So the I knew you were alcoholic tilt look, you know, when you say I'm alcoholic. Yeah, tell us something new, Sue, okay? And then you tell them all the things you did wrong, and they dismiss you, you know? And I'm like, okay, I didn't do that right. So I go back, and I rewrite it out. I don't run it by my sponsor. Of course not, because then I won't get to do what I want to do, you know? So I go back and I run it, try it again. And she goes, why are you here again? I said, well, I thought maybe you didn't hear me right, you know? And I mean, that part, that story is amazing, because I got to tell you a quick story. That same woman who hated my gut, which she really had right there, yeah, I did a lot of wrong things there. That place I worked and went off, the place that I, let's just say, I am working with her again 20 years later, and we stepped up and saw each other, and she looked at me, and she had that look like, are you still sober look? And I want to announce I'm still sober and so much better. You know, don't we want to tell people, we are so much better. I am not the same crazy bitch that you knew back then, because I was crazy at the beginning of the year. I was just like always trying to wheel and deal, you know, and I just, you know, and we went to lunch and it finally came up. And I was so happy to say, yes, I am still sober. And it made me feel really good because it made me fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous all over again. I get to fall in love with AA every day because when I get to see how I behave on a daily basis. And sometimes it's not good. But here's the part that's really good about the not good, is that I know where to go to find out the good. And I know who to call to get the good. I know what I got to do to make things right. You know, I work with, I am the, oh, and I got to tell them one guy. When I first come in here, oh, he pissed me off. And I, Clyde. Okay. Not judging, just observing. Okay. Clyde came up to me and he said, And I had like, oh gosh, I had like 6 months or whatever. And I just had such an attitude. And he comes up to me and he said, you know what? You think you're too smart for us. He said, and that's going to get you drunk. And I set off to prove him wrong. And that is where I learned that this was not a head thing, it was a heart thing. Because later as I walked through this thing and I started reading these steps and I started finding the God of my understanding, I found that you can't hear God when your lips are flapping. Okay? And so I quickly learned to bring a practice into my life, because the thing that says in here, biggest lie, prayer and meditation. Now, people, you know, I like to, I'm from the 70s. Meditation, pot, is synonymous, okay? Stone, you know, I mean, you know, I had John Lennon as my, you know, guidance of what meditation was, you know, and the gurus and all that. So when I read prayer and meditation, I was a little like, what is that? So as you read it, it tells you about it. It tells that it's your opportunity to listen. So how you find that practice, and this is how I found the practice, is that I go outside in the morning for 10 minutes to 15 to 20, and I listen for birds. And I listen for the train, because I live near a train. And I listen for cars, and I listen for the annoying dogs next door. And I just practice learning how to listen. And then the other thing you guys told me to do is you told me how to practice to learn how to tell the truth. Rarely have we seen anyone who is not rigorous honest. So I found a sponsor that I am rigorously honest to. Whenever I don't want to tell her, I'm on the phone. And I tell her embarrassing things. I have told her things that we are crying laughing, because it is really ridiculous, some of the things I pull. But anyway, so you've got to learn the rigorous part of this. So then you grow and AA becomes part of who you are, and it becomes a package. It becomes all as a whole unit, like the whole body. Not just steps 1, 2, 3. All of them together work together to make who you are as a person. Because the reality was, I could not feel comfortable with the world at all, at any point in time. That's why I used the alcohol. That's why I used the drugs. But when I finally started doing the steps, reading the steps, doing them, actually putting some action, it says, there's a whole chapter into action. That is a reason it's in there. You know, we can go to a smorgasbord and there could be food everywhere and still starve to death. We have to do the eating. We have to do the work in order to get this thing. So anyway, I manage 7 men, okay? 7 early time men. And I manage, and I'm in a group of management, and I'm the only woman. Okay. So I love AA, because you guys I let people piss me off. And I think I am entitled to let you know why, okay? And I think I'm entitled to punish you as well for doing that, because if I'm uncomfortable, you should be too. And I have a lot of years, and I, you know, and in this group, and one thing about this, I started this management meeting at this business that I'm at, and so we needed a secretary to manage, and I said, you know, because I know how we work, you know, we have the recycling secretary. I said, why don't we have a secretary every month and rotate them out here? They would have thought I was brilliant, and I'm like stealing all our ideas, you know? But I did get myself in trouble when one of the guys says, hey, yeah, it's my birthday. And I said, your belly button birthday? And he goes, what? what other birthdays are there? Everywhere. choices. And so anyway, I want to tell, I'm going to wrap it up here because my time is almost up and I'm not going to take it to 9:30, and I know some of you are going, thank God. But anyway, there is one little grateful thing that I will always be grateful to Carol for. When I first got her as a sponsor, that mother of mine I hated. I had not come to terms with her in my sobriety. I had a lot of years sober, and I had not come to terms to loving that woman. I was pissed at her. I felt like she owed me amends. I felt like she said she was an AA, she quit drinking. So I said, well, then you know you owe me amends. Okay. She didn't do it. So anyway, so I went and I had, Carol and I just became sponsor. You know that wonderful time we stood across from each other and trying to get to know each other. Okay. So I'm thinking she's going to love me. All right? And so she says to me, and I give her the whole mama, you know, drama story, and what a, you know, ungrateful parent she was, and all this stuff she did to me. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so she goes to me, and she goes, your mother doesn't owe you a damn thing. She doesn't owe you to me. What you owe her is your love, because that's what you're put on this earth to do. It's to love one another. Not the words I was looking for. And so I immediately called my mom and said, I'm going to come see you, Mom. And visit you, because she was always wanting me to come visit her, and I always had excuses not to go visit her. So I got on a plane and I went and visited that woman, and I loved her, and it was magical. When you change your being and your words are so powerful. You want to keep your insanity in place? Keep talking about it. You want to keep your resentments in place? Keep talking about it. If you want to keep your anger in place, keep talking about it. What you got to do is change it. And I went there to change it. And I quit talking about how horrible my mother was. And I started talking about how I'm going to love her. And I used Carol to do that. And I went and I loved my mama. And I went and bought her things. And I did all, took her to the favorite restaurant. She loved crappy food. She loved that fat Texas toast, butter, fried. Oh, right? Yeah, I did it all. I ate it all. She was in Kansas City at the time. They didn't have good food there. Okay, so I'm all about the food. All right, so I was sitting on the porch with that woman, and all I cared about was loving her, because she taught me you just need to love this woman. And you need to not look for what she does for you, but what you do for her. And out of nowhere, she turned to me and she said, honey, I'm sorry for being a horrible mother. And I don't want to talk about it, okay? But I'm really sorry. And that was it. It was awesome. It was my pivotal moment to know that this program works when you give it a chance. When you do the things that it tells you to do, you've got to cut the resentments loose. That thing will kill you. It tells us we will drink over our resentments. If you don't figure that one out, you might as well... this guy will give you $20 to drink. I heard that tonight at dinner. He'll give you $20 to go back out and drink. But if you don't get rid of those resentments and you don't get rid of looking how other people should treat you, you may not drink, but you will be nutty and you will be miserable. Sometimes I need a drink when I'm like that, you know? But you know what? That's when you pick up the program and you quit trying to feel, but learn how to do. Because I'm a feel junkie. I gotta feel good. And I have learned that this is about action and doing and not how I feel. And that's important to me to know that. And I get reminded. You know, I have a saying, that same woman who got drunk that I was judging, should have been my sponsor. But anyway, she gave me one of the best sayings I've ever learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. She told me when I was out in the parking lot bitching like hell, like I normally do, and she told me that if it takes 20 miles to march in the woods, it's going to take 20 miles to march out. So my insanity and my drugs and drinking happened for a long time. So it's not an overnight fix that's coming out. And that's why the program is one of progress, because we become comfortable. And we're just trying to get comfortable. And that saying was wonderful. Now, let me tell you where I got busted on that saying. I used that saying with my little normie daughter, by the way. I have two alcoholic sons and a normie daughter. All right? That little normie daughter, don't use AA sayings to normies, okay? They don't like it. You know what she said to me when I tried to use that? I was using that whole, you know, AA spiritual tilt head. And, you know, and she looked at me and she said, I got airdropped in your mess. You know that? I got airdropped, okay? she goes, I want to airlift it out of your insanity. You know? I was like, okay, you're right, all right. So anyway, it is so wonderful. People that I love, that I know, that we have journeyed this together, and that is the most beautiful part, that I have just got really clear that we are growing old together. And I never thought that I would ever be, because when I came in here, it wasn't to come stand up. Because I remember the first time I heard a speaker, the very first one, he was crying. And I said, oh man, come on. I mean, but I have become everything I made fun of in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this program. I love my sponsor. I love the women that are in my life in this program. I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I practice this on a daily basis. And I'm a better person today than I used to be. And I have bad days. And I, you know, please do not pull in front of me. Okay? You will challenge my spiritual well-being. I remember one time my car was up some chick's rear. She turned into the Alano Club. I was like, oh no! I'm going to have to make an amends. So anyway, I have become that person that I made fun of. And I am so grateful that I'm that dorky alcoholic who believes in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that it works like the way our book says, that it does tell us we need a spiritual part. I am not going to ever try and not sell that this is a spiritual program. And if you do not get the spiritual part, look around at your life and see what's going on. Because that means something might be missing. So anyway, thank you with all my heart.